So first of all, I'd like to thank Vet Records for the opportunity to talk to you about One Trim in Facts. And as we went around the table earlier, I heard that some of you are actually either starting to work on digital consolidation projects or you're in the midst of working on digital consolidation projects, which is great, because how I've structured this presentation is really to talk to you about how you make it happen. Because I would contend that when you think about the technology, in a technical sense, it's not that hard really to roll out, you know, a trim system. What is complex is how do we actually deliver the principle of the State Records Act, which is that, you know, organisations manage records. Records are meant to support, you know, business processes, and they're meant to be well managed. When you get to the supporting the business processes, it actually implies the level of business process maturity, which is sometimes not there in organisations which are merging. Because in a prior organisation, the processes were probably documented and were therefore, you know, repeatable. So they were probably documented, people were trained in them, and there was a level of repeatability. When you have a merged organisation, what you quite often have for a period of time is you have a level of business process immaturity as the organisation seeks to understand how they do things in sort of a merged or joined way. So that makes it much more complex. When we get to the well-managed part, what you find is that new organisations have new structures and therefore new formal and informal communication channels, which means, well, the way we used to manage and the processes and steps and who used to do various things also changes. So when you're rolling out an EDRMS in a consolidated environment, it usually does mean that you're dealing with organisations that have merged and therefore emerging business processes, and quite complex people dynamics, because you've created a range of uncertainty for people who are trying to do their work. That uncertainty will extend to what we call a range of locked-in variables. So some of those locked-in variables, and you'd all know that technology locks in things better than any other variable that we have. So when you lock in a piece of technology, you lock in the associated skills, you know, the training, the companies that supply the technology, and all of the support resources. So when you change any of that, you change the winners and losers around all of that, and you're changing the commercial arrangements and politics from the micro level to the macro level. You're also causing for human beings at the coalface a whole range of changes for them. So, you know, for instance, if I were expert in my trim and you're changing that, you're changing, if you like, in my own mind, my pecking order in relation to that system. And therefore, the whole, what I would call, the socioeconomic and political environment within which people work. So I guess I want you to think of the technology in terms of the socio-politics of the workplace and the social and economic relations within which people work. The reason I'm talking at this level of complexity is we forget this. And in order to work with this, we need to impact at all levels in the organisation, and we need to manage the external environment. Because what's in that external environment is the regulator, you know, State Records, are our stakeholders, because at the end of the day, while these are state records, the community has a significant stake, certainly in the records that FACTS is managing and that I'm assisting with at the moment. The commercial firms, you know, are in that external environment, and the suppliers of various services, like the training skills, you know, are in that external environment. So when people say, oh, it was difficult to get this in, or this program failed, it will rarely be that they couldn't get the storage space. It'll rarely be they couldn't get an extra server. It'll be that something went wrong in the complexity of the social and economic relations of that workplace. And when we think of workplace, we have to think of a nested hierarchy of places. So it's the workplace starts at a person and their relationship with their technology, which may not be in their office. So this morning I was, you know, happily working in a coffee shop. I can see Anthony's now happily working in this room. So that's that workplace. But workplaces have a nested hierarchy. So we work within a business unit, you know, within bigger structures. And it gets more and more complex. So I wanted to talk with you about how one achieves implementation, given that that's the environment. Because as we know, about 85% of programs fail because of the inability to manage that change. And I would contend that that's because they're not seeing the complexity of it. They see change in terms of messaging, which is essentially baseline communications, and training. That's a very simple way to look at change. I think it's a little more complex. So what is OneTrim? In a simple way, we're trying to merge six TRIM data sets into one, and we're going from 7.1, which is a relatively aged version of TRIM, to 8.3, Records Manager 8.3, which was the latest just before they popped 9 out, which was more recent. You'll see at the bottom that ADIC TRIM is remaining separate. The reason for that is, as you would all know, given the NDIS transition, which is occurring at the federal level in Australia, that data set will be closed, be made read-only. The Retention and Disposal Authority will be applied. What is a state archive will be moved to the digital state archive, and the rest will be appropriately managed. So ADIC has been kept out of OneTrim, but it is being upgraded because, of course, ADIC will continue from now until into 2018 in some form. The other data sets, we're talking Housing New South Wales, that's about 4,500 users at the moment, and it's about 20 million records. CS TRIM is about 2,500 users and about 3 million records. Business Link TRIM is somewhat smaller, a bit under a million records, and now we're down to about 500 users. Fax TRIM has grown in use, and I'll talk about why that is. That's about 4,000, actually slightly bigger than Housing TRIM now. I think it's about 4,600 users, and still a relatively small number of records under the million. AHO TRIM is the Aboriginal Housing Office TRIM. That's a small TRIM data set because Aboriginal Housing Office itself is quite small, and the under 100 users there. Then Land and Housing Corporation is a subset of the Housing New South Wales data set, and again a relatively small number of users and records. It's about 3% of the Housing New South Wales data set. Having said that, those data sets have been configured completely differently. They all have different record types, they have different business classification schemes, they have different business rules. When I arrived, they all had different records management policies. They have different guidelines. They couldn't be more different if we had set out to make them more different. What that means then is that when people go to work in them, they're applying a whole range of different knowledge and skills. So some of them have document attachments, some of them have subfolders, some of them have legacy records, some of them don't. They're all set up to give different levels of user permissions. In some of them, users can create containers, in some of them they can't. In some of them, there are clear titling rules, in others, there aren't. The BCSs range from what I would call a legacy BCS in the housing data set, which predates really the 98 legislation, because it really is the old kind of library approach to titling rather than the functional, to CS TRIM, which is relatively modern, to Fax TRIM that doesn't have any functional terms in it because it was set up to serve really a kind of a central office sort of situation. So they're very, very different. So when we're talking about merging them, you have to say, well, how would we go about that? One key recommendation that I made to the Fax Board, which was accepted, was that I said we need to move to a new greenfield OneTrim for Fax. The reason I said that was there's strong cultural attachment in any culture to history, to records, to documents, and to language. Because when you're dealing with an organisation's records, you're dealing with a deep embedded part of their culture. It's their language. It's their documents, it's their history, it's their memories. There's really strong emotional attachments there. So if we chose the housing data set, for instance, we're alienating the other cultures which were still in Fax, because Fax was really quite new at the time. So we were dealing with, and I thought, this is going to make the change very hard. Whereas if we all have to leave and we all have to go to a new home, we're all going on the same journey. And we're not saying one is better than the other. We're saying, hey, we need to understand what the business processes are in OneFax. We need to understand what the documents that support those processes are for OneFax. The other difficulty with choosing one of the data sets is you're therefore then choosing the processes that have been embedded in the actions or workflows that are entrenched in that data set or that are locked into that data set. So that was the reason behind those recommendations, and it was pleasing that the Fax Board did accept that. So what were the critical requirements? The critical requirements were to improve usability and functionality for operational staff needing access to records and information. So with a merged Fax, we have staff who now work across all of our service streams. So our service streams range from social housing to child protection to ageing and disability to supporting responses to domestic violence. So complex service streams, working with very vulnerable people, often very critical time, and very sensitive, highly confidential information in many instances. The other thing we had to meet was a requirement that we could move to supply as a service and to a cloud base at the end of the transition. We did discuss moving to supply as a service right off. The FACTS board made the decision that really it's best practice to consolidate, to organise the information in an appropriate fashion, and then move to supply as a service. That decision would also have been influenced by the complexity and the confidentiality of the information, so we wanted to minimise any risks to information security by making sure that it was all managed, you know, in-house first, and so that when we moved to a cloud, we're very clear that everything was, you know, very appropriately organised, because in the merge, we didn't want to expose any unnecessary risks there. We wanted to upgrade to a new level of functionality to enable modern and connected working. So the move from 7.1 to 8.3 is quite significant for FACTS. And at various steps in that, we've also leveraged some parts of Office 365. And the future will leverage an ability to have SharePoint as a front end on trim. We needed to make some operational cost savings because supporting the 6 different data sets, of course, is supporting a level of locked-in knowledge around all those data sets, staff with the knowledge to support all of that, the licenses, you know, it goes on. And then we needed to move relatively quickly because for the business, it was really causing some significant pain points. If you were in a district office and you were working for the district director, you would be definitely using 4 of the trims constantly. So not at a different part of the day, you know, I do CS in the morning, I do housing in the afternoon, no, all of the time. So your ability to switch between those, given the completely different construction of the data sets, you know, it's tough. I know them really well and I find it hard. And I don't have the time pressure that you would have in an operational, you know, frontline environment. So really tough. So the focus shifted from the technology to supporting the operational transformation through enabling the consolidation to one platform. So you see very early on, we're very focused on delivering service to our clients and transforming the business processes behind that. As I mentioned earlier, it was about supporting working together in one FACTS. So I mentioned that each of the trims has many different policies, business rules and configurations, over 150 different record types. The 6 separate trims, the current workaround was to allow multi-trim access. So this was good in that it gave people visibility of the records that they needed to in order to do their work, but you can imagine that there were perhaps some errors generated by this, this workaround in some of the data sets. So what was absolutely central to delivery was simply to simplify, consolidate and improve consistent access across FACTS. People wanted to come to work, turn on their computer, be able to access their information in the same way regardless of the service stream. The next part of the case for change was about building capability. So the older version really couldn't be used for the consolidation because it was actually out of support. I think it's been out of support since March 2014, and I think we're now in 2016. So we really needed a solution that would provide a single view of customer performance. We needed faster discovery times, and we needed to support remote working. So we really needed to actually look at ways of increasing the interface for devices that enable mobile working. So we're talking, you know, smartphones, iPads, this sort of thing with our trim. Increase the connectivity because we're increasingly sharing information with our partners in the non-gov space who are delivering our businesses. Traditionally, Housing Trim has had a level of connectivity with the community housing providers. They have access to part of Housing Trim with appropriate lockouts. And we would see in future that some other of our partners might also have that, you know, have that ability. Fully digital working, so we're talking about interfaces with the web, SharePoint and a range of other applications. And we wanted to automate information security as much as possible so that we minimise the decisions the user had to make and therefore we minimise risks around errors being made in relation to information security. So what I talked about earlier there, if you like, was the case for change. So you can see that it started from what are the critical requirements of the system, which were really all about what did the business need to serve its clients, through to, well, okay, so what is the case for change? So it's about consolidating the silos, building capability and making working easier. What I want to show you now are two visions of a timeline. So I mentioned earlier about the workplace and a nested hierarchy. Sometimes you have to manage up and sometimes you have to manage down. When you're managing up with the timeline, what we found really helpful was to identify the deliverables in the activity stream and then to look at the benefits and to sort of see it on one page. So you could say, well, this is what we're going to do within relatively short periods of time, or roll out tranches, and this is the benefit that you might get. So the first phase was all about mobilising the program setup. What was really important there was the governance arrangements, where we embedded the change management, the support and the sponsorship from the top of the organisation, really right down to quite low levels in the organisation early on. And I've got a slide later where I'll talk about that. Analysing and consolidating all of the trim schemas. So we really had to understand how these trims were set up, and everything from commissioning the drafting of a single records management policy for FACTS to reflect the new standards that have been issued by State Records, the removing of the former six policies. Now, that's easy in a writing sense, but how do we change what's in people's minds? So we had quite a detailed process which was run through what I call my business advisory group and my technical advisory group, down through a range of subcommittees in the organisation, where we had people reviewing and working on this policy document to get a range of buy-in. Record Keeping Innovations, who you know are very skilled in this area, actually drafted the policy for us, but it was the translation of that through a number of hands in the business that got people really talking about records policy across the organisation, which I understand is quite novel, perhaps. The other thing that was interesting here was the development of a single business classification scheme. Now, the decision at the end was to go with, of course, GA28 for the administrative records and the various functional disposal authorities for the functional terms. That was a really large journey for FACTS, because if you're coming from a system of, as I mentioned, almost a library system of multi-subject area terms, to a functional system, that's a really significant move for people to make in their minds and even conceptually. So again, there was a lot of, we ran a lot of strategic conversations through the governance groups and through supporting groups on this, and we did a lot of listening. We commissioned Optus Alpha West to actually review the business classification schemes with us, to identify the differences between them, to identify the gaps. We actually mapped all of the records against the existing classification schemes so that, of course, we can transfer them across to the new. I think we've got 10,000 lines in a spreadsheet, which was a delight for the consultant. We went out across FACTS, and I went with the consultant across all the business areas to talk to them about some of the things that we had found. In that process, we actually found that some of the disposal authorities, in fact, specifically 303, needed to be updated. So we've worked with both Land and Housing Corporation and Aboriginal Housing Office, and State Records have been a great assistance. And again, we used top consultants, RKI and Scylla, to work with our staff to come up with amendments to 303, which are going before the State Records Board, I think, to your August session for approval. And that was that was sort of quite a leap. And that's where we actually had our staff come to us and say, we think we do things that perhaps aren't covered here, you know, which was because we'd done, you know, the conversation. And that's a much better place to be coming from than one of imposing. Then my understanding is the consultants had really good discussions throughout the housing stream around those issues and concerns. So we were able to update that. The next thing we did then was from the policies, we drilled down into a set of guidelines, a records management program for FACTS, and business rules, so that we could work out how do we work together around here with records. With the business rules, we kept it really simple and very high level, because I don't actually believe that people go back to even electronic documents and say, now, which business rule do I apply here? It has to be almost intuitive for them, and they have to get it. We then have, in the rollout, we have a template where they can develop their own detailed business rules. So I'm thinking about areas like legal that have very precise titling rules, or like the housing tenancy files that have very precise titling rules, and they will have their own business rules. And the policy is, as long as it's compliant with the high-level business rules, that's fine. The next thing we did, which was very interesting, was a single ministerial record type, and some of you will have heard me talk about MiniApp, which used some functionality which is in RM8 to generate a fully automated end-to-end seamless workflow across FACTS, and Ryan has seen it, which actually starts from now the Minister's office and goes back to the Minister's office. The extension to that we're working on at the moment is where the community puts a complaint into the Minister's website. MiniApp will grab it and will work right through the organisation and back again. We launched that in mid-November. We now have 14 of 15 districts fully e-approving. We have about half of the executive in the rest of FACTS using e-approvals, which means that's all fully electronic. We have both Minister's office approving electronically. It was a significant achievement in that initially there was some pushback. Now, when I say that, we had a total of 9 complaints to our help desk, and I know it's funny, and 135 emails to an email support that I set up, which we called MiniApp Help. I tried to stay very close to my users. So because I talk to them all the time, I work in their offices, on various days of the week I'll be in different FACTS offices, and they will tell me things. So we've got 135 touches to MiniApp Help, 68% of them were about business processes. Because when you make a workflow across an emerging organisation, what you find is you've broken down those silos and you've connected work which was previously unconnected. Because if you're sending an email or it's not fully workflowed in Trim, you're not actually forcing that level of connectivity. That MiniApp tool blew away 13 record types. There were 13 ministerial record types prior to that. MiniApp only functions in FACTS Trim and we'll move it to OneTrim. It's backed by a reporting tool which uses Office 365. It's real-time reporting. We can tell you where a MiniApp is at any point of the day. We can drop down into it. We can know who's working on it. It's nice. So the achievement there was we offered to remove the pain points in the 13 ministerial record types, and we tried to remove the embedded process duplication, which was in all of those different business rules and policies. The next phase was about standardising the application, changing the consolidation and configuration, creating the greenfield trim in dev, so that we could enable some cross-stream working. And we've done all of that. OneTrim is up in dev, and I'll show you some. I think I've done up. I'll put some screenshots here. I hope so. The next thing which we're doing now is we are moving all of the records into OneTrim. So that's why we had the 10,000 lines in the spreadsheet. We know exactly where all of the former BCS terms map to the new OneTrim BCS. We also purchased Control Point, which you would know is a tool which I can run across the data sets to identify duplicate records or to make inquiries about the records. Obviously, when we're merging 6 data sets and we've had some working in the duplicate data sets, there will be, you know, duplicate records. That will be a task which will be done by BAU after OneTrim, you know, finishes. We'll run it across the data set, we'll give the information. You'd know that once you buy Control Point, you can use it against any repository for as long as you want. It's not like, you know, you use it once. And there will be a significant amount of work around that. And now what we're working on is basically the final rollout. Now, I will point out something here. This slide came, and I left it in deliberately for this presentation. There was a learning that we had. So what we embed in OneTrim is continuous learning. So at the end of every phase, we say, you know, how did that go? And what were we able to do? You know, what couldn't we do? And what can we learn from? With the MiniApp, we did some action learning with the organisation. Because when we rolled it out, they said it met their business requirements. They said, but we want it to do other things. So, well, if you talk to me, we can do that. So we set up a group across the organisation that basically it was really phone conferencing, because right across all of our districts, and we talked to them about the changes that they wanted and how we would develop patches and how we would roll them out, and they would test the patches, you know, with UAT. So they learned lots of things. They learned about engaging with the program. They learned about how we develop patches. They learned about rollouts. They learned about go-lives. And the reason we wanted to do this with this single record type is when we turn on OneTrim, we may have to do all of these things and right across the state and all at once. So we needed to build in some early learning. Another thing we learnt was Some of this took a bit more time than we thought. We are on track for delivery in December, but how do you keep it on track? Sometimes you have to pull out things. So originally we were going to consolidate on 7.3, you know, in a 7 environment where everybody was familiar, and then upgrade to 8.3. We found an economy where we could actually move directly to 8.3. ATIC, which is an upgrade rather than a consolidation, so no migration involved, upgrade. We have to swim through a 7.3 environment in the back end, so that can be done, but no touch on the user, so the user only gets one change. The migration, we're using a migration tool, so no technical difficulty there. So it's really important. We probably saved 6 months. We would have been probably 6 months late. Anthony didn't hear that. If we didn't do that. So I encourage you to always, like, check in on your program, talk with your vendor, talk with your strategic advisors, like your digital records people in state archives, state records, get expert advice. So my program sponsor and my steering committee required us to do that on an ongoing basis, and that was wonderfully helpful, and I would really recommend it because things change. So this is our timeline now for the build and deploy, and we are on time. So we're starting the migration, we're sort of into that, and we're starting the training and support, which I'll talk about in a minute, and we will finalise by the end of December. So yes, we're popping together the data sets and creating the new shiny greenfield one trim. What does this mean? Well, the record types have been tidied up in various ways. Obviously, there were some multiple record types that had similar purposes in the system. So, you know, everybody had a folder, a subfolder, and a document. So, obviously, we just have, you know, one admin document, one admin folder, one admin subfolder. There were over 300 additional fields in use, but really they hadn't been used terribly much. So we popped them all into a tab, and we removed all of those record types that really hadn't been used, you know, very much. And then we changed the name of some key record types, and we modernised the structure to reflect changed legal environments, you know, around things like, you know, privacy, retention periods, things like this. So this is a little bit about what it looks like. You can see there a document, a subfolder, an admin folder, a grouping container. I don't know if any of you use grouping containers. No? Okay, so what a grouping container can do, retention is not applied at the grouping container level, but for instance, my program, which is OneTrim, I could have a program grouping container called OneTrim, then I could have a folder, which is my, you know, phase one rollout, I could have a subfolder, which is, you know, design, and I could have a document in that, which is the OneTrim design in phase one. Then I could have another folder which is change management for OneTrim, but when I click on the grouping folder of OneTrim, everything to do with OneTrim is in it. What that's good for users is it mimics their network drives.
Are you talking about like a series folder?
Yes. For fax, we hadn't used this functionality before. So it's quite good. The other thing there is the e-approval, which is basically the functionality of MiniApp, but we're going to roll it out for all kinds of approvals in fax. So for instance, leave, you know, financial approvals, really anything. You'll be able to work so right across. And there we have the grouping container, the admin folder, the subfolder, the document, and the document attachment. So, for instance, if you had a briefing note about finance, an attachment might be the detailed financial analysis. If you had a housing client form as a document, the attachment might be a bank statement or the budget or something to prove income. Now, the BCS, this is quite wordy, and I'm assuming you're getting the presentation. So, you know, and I'll just speak to it generally. I mentioned earlier that the BCS is primarily GA28 and the FRIDAs. All BCS terms are linked to the appropriate retention schedules, which will be applied to records by default on creation. The BCS terms are not segregated by any previous agency names because we are trying to make it, you know, one fax. What we have done, however, is because some of the wording, for instance, in the community services FRIDA, there's one which is disaster recovery, that could apply to any, so there's brackets at the end that says, you know, CS, so people understand that. We're going to train the super users to give them a lot of training on how to customise the display of the BCS, and we're really encouraging the use of favourites. so that people can send their BCS to their favourites and they're not having to, you know, go back to the BCS every time and recreate it. We're actually giving super users a full day of face-to-face training because we're really trying to make them the support for the users across FACS. We'll also be developing a range of quick reference guides around the BCS. The reason we're going to this much trouble is we've noticed that in all of the data sets there was a range of misallocation to terms, to BCS, you know, terms and folders. And we have a belief that if we can just get people to know the area of the BCS that they usually go to, then it will, you know, sort of fix the bulk of it. We're going to automate that where possible, but we won't be able to fully automate it. Another thing that we've done here is we've bought a tool which automatically generates subfolders. So for instance, in the project management space, we're going to auto-generate subfolders to match the prints to schema, which we use in FACS for project management. Equally, we can automatically generate subfolders in the finance area. So when it comes time to, you know, regenerate your finance folders the next financial year, it's fully automated. So we're trying to remove error by automation, and we're trying to reduce time by automation, which actually leads to consistency and standardization. The other thing we're doing is we're going to do some heavy analysis with each of the business representatives so that we're very clear on the BCS terms that apply to their business area. Again, that's the super users primarily, so they actually know where to go. Use of favourites, we've mapped all of the migrated records, and the migrated records, and I think I have a screenshot that shows you this, actually show the data set that they came from in the view pane in Trim, and they have the original record number also in the top sort of title line, not just in the user-defined field. And default access controls will be applied against the BCS. This sounds simple, but we've really put a lot of thought into the BCS terms, how we simplify it, how we automate it, and how we train in it. What I want to talk about now is the change sponsorship framework for One Trim, because in terms of getting this to happen, we've had to have a lot of support from the top and a lot of support from the bottom. Certainly rolling out MiniApp, which, you know, it sounds like only 145 touches all up, which doesn't sound a lot. You know, if I call the manager of the help desk, which I did, and I said, Jay, is this a large number? He said, and 15 minutes on a Monday morning. But it can feel difficult for program sponsors. It can feel difficult. So you're going to need close relationships with your program sponsors. You're going to need to have built credibility. You're going to need to have taken them on the journey so that when you need them, they're there. You know, they're there for you. And certainly Anthony, the CIO, the main sponsor of MiniApp, which was the head of the Ministerial Communications area, stood firmly behind it. And, you know, that's how we got it in, really. It's very important. So the change sponsorship for One Trim goes right to the level of the FACS board. One Trim has been discussed at FACS board level several times and once quite recently. It's chaired by a DEPSEC level. So Anne Hughes was the first chair of the One Trim Steering Committee and is head of Land and Housing Corporation. And now we have Shane Hamilton, who's the chief executive of Aboriginal Housing Corporation. And there are very senior members on that committee. So we've got the CIO, we've got district directors, and we've got ED level people. Very, very important in terms of managing the risk that you're going to come into contact with and providing the cultural support that you'll need for this level of change. Beneath that, we have a business advisory group and a technical advisory group. There are 12 divisions in FACS. Every division in FACS is represented on the business advisory group. The one thing the steering committee asks me when I put anything before them, whether it's a policy, a guideline, a BCS change, we want to do MiniApp, we want to do FACS app, we want to do this, and has the business advisory group seen it? What's their view? Who in the business has been consulted? Who have you discussed this with? What are the risks? What is the business impact? What's the impact on the front line? The business advisory group has been amazingly helpful in this way, and it's very efficient. It meets monthly. One Trim chairs nothing. We always get the business to chair or the technical area to chair so that we never influence the outcome of a meeting and people feel able to consult and they can contact the chair indirectly if they feel we're not listening. So that's been a very, very important mechanism. We always have a VC hookup because we have people from around the state, you know, phone in for that meeting. Very engaged group. The other group is the technical advisory group, and this has been vital. So that's where we have all of the technical people, in fact, have a representative on this group. So the Citrix people who, supply the support for IT, for the, all of the IT systems in fax, the user support people, the records team, the trim specialists, every technical specialist that touches is on that group. There's about 15 of them. In addition, we have a digital records, a person from Set Records, and at the moment on the business advisory group, we have Sally Irvine-Smith from GRR, and on the steering committee, we have Jeff Hinchcliffe for his representative. So we've linked very closely in to make sure that we're compliant and to make sure that we get good advice. The technical group has been fantastic because whenever we've had a technical issue, I've been able to say, look, guys, we've got this problem. How do we work on this together? So we've partnered from the beginning. They don't feel like I'm an internal client. They feel like they're all part of one trim. As an example, when we did get the vendor on board to start rolling out earlier this year, I had a morning tea at Liverpool and I invited along the people who were going to work with us, and there were like 40 people in the room, and they all think they're part of one trim. They're not actually paid by one trim. But I think you need that level of ownership, because then really we've never had a problem to get support from the technical area. And in fact, this is important, because one trim financially is a relatively small program in fax, but we get support way above the big programs because of this governance structure, because everybody feels, very connected. Beneath that, we have the change partners group. So there's a change partner for every business unit in fax, and we have a lead change partner at the divisional level. So I was at a meeting of the lead change partners yesterday, and they do things like we're doing a business impact assessment of trim across the business. We don't do that. We produce the tool, which is fully automated, which they answer questions and tells us the impact. But that assessment is run by the change partner for every business unit in fax. They run those change meetings, and so we run the meeting this week. Next week, every business unit will have its one trim change meeting, and they will hear about, from their change partner, everything that's happening, and will have the information fed back up. That way, we stay very close to the coalface. Every business unit has nominated their super users, so we've got, and it's growing, they're like multiplying, we've got about 330 super users across fax at the moment. That was yesterday. We've got almost 200 change champions, which are, they support the comms across the business, and we've got 43 all-up change partners for the various business units, and they're all really very engaged. You need that level of engagement, because we don't want anything to happen like somebody's working remotely in Broken Hill and we've cut off their access to information and they're dealing with a vulnerable person. We don't want that. So the only way not to have that happen, or at least to minimise that risk, is to have a really high level of engagement and communications. So where are we at the moment? Well, you see it's August, and you see a bit of the end of July there. So yes, yesterday and the day before, we did start the solution design briefing sessions. So these are 45-minute webinars that are being held. There's five a day. And you just, you log in on our LMS to the webinar, and we take you through, with screenshots, elements of the new one trim solution. And it's interactive, so people ask questions, they write their questions on the GoTo training, or they talk and ask their questions. We also video them, so that, and we put a link to them, so that if just general users want to listen, they can click on the link. We have an fax intranet site for One Trim, which has everything we produce on it, has a full list of change partners, super users, members of the business advisory group, so anyone in fax can find their representative and get in contact. The next sessions, which are starting tomorrow, are the business classification scheme sessions. So this is where we take them through in detail exactly what we've done to the business classification scheme and how it will work. The next set of training is the UAT training, and we're UATing between the 8th and the 19th of August. People will UAT at their desks. Now, this might sound unusual for an IT person. I don't like to UAT in a closed, sterile environment, because that doesn't tell me how somebody's computer is working in work. So we UAT across the business. We will do some UAT in Liverpool, because we work in Liverpool, but we'll also UAT right across the state. The UAT users are a subset of the super users, so we're going to train them, they'll get their scripts, and we'll have one of the vendor's consultants full-time for 10 days to support those super users. By support, I mean if they have a problem, you know. But we'll get all of the scripts back, and we will, of course, manage issues as you routinely would. Then we're going to have a series of sessions on the migration and the validation. The first session on the migration will be for all super users and change partners, which will be, what does your new OneTrim look like? If you had a record in CS, what does it look like in OneTrim? If it's in housing, what does it look like in OneTrim? And some of that is very complex. So if you think about legal services, we have legal services in ADEC, housing, CS, Aboriginal housing, land and housing, facts, and I'm sure we could find some more. And of course, they did everything differently. And they're now working together, which means they're sitting at desks near each other. And when I say that, what I mean is, when we turn on OneTrim, it's going to automatically and immediately break down every silo. So that will be a surprise. Even though I have to say legal have been incredibly fabulous, they have their own lead change partner because I knew the complexity. They're the only business unit with a lead change partner. Every other business unit just gets a change partner and the division has a lead change partner. When we saw that complexity, we thought, no, we need to put this, you know, here. We need to stay very close to them. And the lawyers have been fabulous. I mean, they've just been incredible in terms of their uptake and adoption. The second part of the migration session is only for UAT testers, and that's where we're going to get them to validate the migration. Obviously, we will check programmatically, you know, whether the data came across, but what we'll be doing is we'll be saying, okay, you know, here's your information in your old trim, here's your information in the new trim, you know, is it rendered the same? Does it look the same? And that, again, will be right across the state. Then we'll have a training in the same way, webinars on deployment preparation. So all of the super users will know exactly what they have to do for deployment preparation. All of these webinars have a two-page help guide that goes out also. That's sent to everyone who attended, plus it's on our website. They can download it, they can print it, they can email it, anything they want. In addition to that, we have a OneTrim box, so if there's any issues or concerns that they feel weren't addressed, they can email us and we'll get back to them immediately. We have a series of e-learning, which is going on the FACTS LMS. We have, and I'll talk about those courses in a moment, they're extensive. The super users will get a full day of face-to-face training right across the state in locations near where they work. And there'll be webinars for all FACTS staff. DepSec staff will get special half-day face-to-face training because they deal with very complex work. They're the ones who've used, along with the districts, all of the trims, and they often have incredibly tight deadlines. So we need to make sure that they're able to really use the system super immediately. There's the various go-live dates. You'll see we're pretty busy, really. Pretty busy. And the post-go-live support, I've made it very clear to the business that it's only the super users. When you look at the training that we've got, if we were a classic upgrade, we'd only be teaching working with Trim RM8. We actually ran workshops right across the state. We spoke to over 300 FACT staff face-to-face in workshops. We did 25 deep dives of special records to understand issues. And the thing the staff said to us was, we need more training. So like all organisations, classically when you roll things out, there's training. When the program finishes, there's less training. So we heard this across the state, and what they also said to us was, look, we can use our trim, how do we know we can use FACTS-TRIM? OneTrim. So we listened to them, and we're covering everything, record-keeping awareness, which is, Anne has very kindly given us the state records modules, which at the moment we're trying to load on our FACTS LMS, and the FACTS records management policy, they'll be mandatory. So they're on the FACTS LMS. We'll know whether or not you've done them. If you haven't done them, you can't go to face-to-face training and you will be locked out of the webinar and you will not get access to TRIM. So we're really trying to up awareness of your responsibilities under the State Records Act. To be fair to FACTS, we've had no problems with this. The staff have been incredible. I mean, they will want to know when they're all interested. The next set of suites, you see everything from introduction to TRIM, searching, editing, creating, e-approvals, advanced TRIM, all of that. So they're all the e-learning modules. With those, we're taking the approach of more generic rather than incredibly highly customised because we want to extend the shelf life. Because if you highly customise them, you change a screenshot and you have to, you know, change the webinar, the e-learning module. The webinars will be available for a 3-month period and at the end of the program they will be turned off. So the message is, if you want a webinar, get your webinar when we're running them, otherwise, you know, it's e-learning. Now that is a significant amount of training. So you would see that in order to manage the senior stakeholder environment, we've engaged the state authority, which is State Records, we've engaged senior levels of the business, we've engaged the middle level through the business advisory groups, the change partners throughout, but what's in it for the staff? So the staff said to us, we want a training, so in order to engage that lower level at the workplace, we've given them the training that they asked for. Now, I will say this was tough for the program because we were a consolidation and upgrade program. So in a financial sense, this was hard work for the program. But we felt it necessary because if you don't give the users something for them, they're not going to help you out, you know, on the journey. Plus, in terms of the effectiveness of your rollout, if people can't use the system, it's really not going to be a good look. That's something about the face-to-face sessions. And so what are we doing next? Well, we're obviously completing the build, the business readiness assessments I've talked about, which are obviously going out right across the business. The migration, which has started and is, it's amazing what you can see when you put it all together. It's incredible. And the other thing we're going to encourage is increased use of locations in TRIM. So if a person becomes a location, then if I type in, you know, John Brown, date of birth 1952, everything about John Brown will come up. So it's like having a single client record without having a single client record. The super user engagement, of course, is continuing, the UAT and the one-term training I talked about. So it's quite a busy program, and I actually have a very small direct team, really only 5 staff, but they're all really super keen and highly skilled. But what I do have is a large engagement across the organisation. So today after this meeting, I'm not going back to Liverpool to work or to Ashfield, I'm actually going to our office in Bligh Street, because when I'm there, the ADIC people will come talk to me. It's sort of about sometimes you've got to be in the business enough. Last week I was in Queanbeyan because they said come down and talk to us. So then, and it's always nicer when they ask you down, and they'd actually set up a VC session so every admin person in the district for an hour logged in and talked to OneTrim. So I went down with our change manager and our principal records manager. Some of you know Michael. So I would encourage you, if you're rolling out these systems, to think about the complexity of people's work, which extends from the top of the organisation where you'll sometimes need a lot of support because users will get, you know, naturally upset when you're changing them, down to the coalface, so something in it for the user, and understand the complexity of the business processes that you will touch and what that means for people, when they do their records, and to somehow be available to the business so that they have some ability to talk with you. Now, obviously, that's sometimes about dedicated mailboxes. We've used webinars, we've used mailboxes, we've used VC sessions. But where possible, if you can, you know, you or your people can get out to talk. Myself and my change manager will be at a district forum tomorrow where the districts come in from across the state. So if we're invited, I'm trying to get invited to all of them, we have been, we go along and we try to speak with them. Because people will tell you, you know, their concerns and ignore them at your peril. Because the risks, certainly for facts with really sensitive information, are quite high. So what I've tried to talk to you about here is not the technical side of the rollout, but for what it's like for a user, for the complexity that they're facing from the multi-systems, and even when you're making something simple and easy, which is what we did with MiniApp, and my tech person who's wonderful said to me, "And I still can't understand, it was only 4 simple steps. Why was it so hard?" Because if I had 40 steps before, and I knew those 40 steps, and you took them away in one day and gave me 4, and connected me to groups I didn't even know I was connected to, it's very scary. You know, so never underestimate the impact on the user and what it means for them, and how frightening it can be for people if they think you're going to remove their ability or their skills to do their job. So if you can support people through this, and that means supporting people at the top and at the bottom and externally, give as much information as you can, I think you'll be successful. And even then it gets scary, so I keep my manager close and my sponsors close.
Very close.
Because if you keep them informed, my thing is no surprises. Yes. You know? So it's like if you keep them informed and they know what you know, then there's a level of confidence there. So it's like I don't ever minimize or hide risks or issues. I view that as an opportunity to succeed. You know? I really think you've really got to encourage. I say to people, if you've got a query and you haven't told me, that's a risk I can't manage. So look, I hope that's been helpful. Because it's podcast and it's public, I've been limited in the amount of sort of information I could give you. If you do work for a government agency, of course you're welcome, as Ryan has done, to come in and see, you know, more detail.
Fantastic. Thank you, Anne.